Hey, everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Leah, and on this episode, I'm giving you a quick shot of romance, but author spotlight edition. And on this author spotlight, I am welcoming debut author Taylor Esposito. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Taylor is a romance novelist from deep in the heart of Texas. She was born and raised in San Antonio, but has lived in Austin for the past 12 years. She enjoys writing love stories with delicious angst, sizzling tension, and tall, handsome, taciturn men. When she's not writing, she can be found walking her chocolate lab, Ruby, cooking or drinking dirty martinis with her friends. So before we start talking boots beneath her bed, let's get to know you. So
yeah,
why romance?
Oh gosh. You know, I've always loved romance. I've always been just a lover girl at heart, I think. I think it was like maybe Titanic when I was seven, just kind of solidified for me that that was the media that I wanted to consume. And just that kind of going hand in hand with always loving writing. So I want to write the love stories that I want to read and the men that I want to fall in love with. So I think it all just, yeah, that's all roads lead to romance for me, I guess.
Okay. I have to ask this question. What are your opinions on, could he fit on the door?
I'm going to go with the Mythbusters and say that no. Because I think that's what they proved, right? Like, I think Cameron on the show just to definitively say he couldn't have fit on the door. So I'm going to say that, no, he couldn't have fit. And even if he did try, it would have ended with both of them dying. Mm-hmm. So
the book would not have made, or the movie would not have made sense if he got on the door.
Like,
there was purpose, like, but the door should have been a little smaller, in my opinion.
Yeah. Exactly. He had to sacrifice. It was devastating and the tragedy of my lifetime, but it happened.
So can you share any writing rituals or habits that you have to help you stay focused?
Yes. This has been such an interesting experience. I've always written for the fun of it. I wrote in school in the newspaper, and I wrote poetry and I wrote fan fiction, and it was always kind of just like having my own schedule and whenever the bug bit me and inspiration came, doing it in a more regimented way has been challenging, but I found that like early mornings for me are the best, of kind of giving my brain, or I guess letting myself use my full brain power before I have to go to work and deplete all of my energy and then try to come home and write. There were multiple times when I was writing this book where I tried to come home and write after work and I would just fall asleep on the couch, like with my laptop on my stomach, just failing. But morning, so I woke up at 5 a.m. every morning and wrote for 2 hours, and then quality was hit or miss just because it was 5 a.m. But I got into that and was able to produce pretty regularly and consistently after I got used to waking up that early. So
you've always been writing. What made you decide to publish?
Yeah, it was kind of a crazy story. I met my editor at Berkeley in New York by chance, and she had read my work, my fan fiction that was online.
Okay.
And essentially just was like, if you're interested in publishing, like, let's have a conversation. And that was kind of it. And it just kind of happened very quickly after that. It felt very surreal, and I still am not fully convinced that this is my life and that this is happening, but yeah. No, it was truly just having somebody that was in your corner and had faith in you and enjoyed your work and was willing to take a chance on you. I got very, very lucky.
Well, sometimes happenstance is the best way to do it.
Yeah, it's honestly nuts. It's funny that you asked me that because I've been just kind of, you know, when you get the opportunity like this as somebody that loves to write and has always dreamed about publishing a novel, it's kind of like a no-brainer when someone says, do you want to go traditional publishing? You're like, of course, like, what do you mean? And then I've been thinking about it recently because I'm still working on my second book right now. And it's just, you know, it's challenging to do that and work and, you know, try to like live life and everything. And I've been wondering like, wow, I guess it makes sense why some people wouldn't want to go full publish route. Like if they just wanted to do it for fun, I'm having so much fun. And this is just, it's crazy because the book isn't even out yet and I'm already having so much fun, but I can understand why it would be maybe difficult for some people for sure.
It is. Well, and so many authors talk about how it's such a solo career. Like you're writing the book and you have like a team that helps you get it from like start to finish. But at the same rate, like when you're a trad author, you have a little bit more of a backing. Like you still have to write the book. You still have to submit the book and all those things. But as an indie, like you have to do everything yourself. And like the trad side, like there's still a lot of work the author has to do on their own, but they do have a little bit of a boost there.
Yes, for sure. So nice. I've gotten very, very lucky with that. Yeah.
So how, when you're writing fanfic, your stories that you're publishing, anything, how do you relate your characters to real life people while still creating a compelling story?
It's a great question. In creating the characters in Boots, something that I did that I noticed kind of throughout the process was pulling different facets of people that I know in real life and sort of plugging them into certain characters, which then evolved into them taking a shape that was similar to those people. So they weren't based on anyone that I know, but like there would be different
like you
little
piecemealed.
Yeah, like little threads of this person's personality that kind of appeared. And sorry, my dog is
no, it's fine. Mine's laying by my feet. So if he starts barking, it's fine. We're used to it. We all have it.
She like it's like she hasn't had water in a month, you know, every time she drinks water. Okay. So I'm very lucky to have a really phenomenal group of friends and a bigger circle even outside of that, just from friends of friends. And so I love to just like observe people and pull little things that interest me and intrigue me and plug those into my novel. And sometimes that happened like subconsciously. I didn't even realize I was doing it, which is really fun. And then I would go back and read a chapter and be like, huh, okay. Like, and it humanizes the characters, which is really important for me. Another thing that was really important for me, especially with a cast of larger size, just with the like ranch hands and the family and all of these different people in play, is I wanted them to be distinguishable.
Right.
And I didn't want for somebody to be able to just pull a line of dialogue out of the book and not know who said it. And so that was something that I was really trying to hone in, was like, even if this person only has this little snippet of screen time in the book, like I want them to have a well-rounded personality and like you have an idea of who they are.
So when you're writing, do you plot out your story or do you pants?
I'm an architect through and through. I have to have an end goal or I will never start. And I've always been like that, but it's something that I've learned is an absolute must, especially with writing novels. Yeah. I can't, for some reason, my brain just will not let me write just in it. Some nebulous direction. I can't do it. I don't know why. That would be cool, but no.
Do you plan out your characters first or do you plan out your plot first? You figure out like your background story, your location, like where do you start your planning?
I usually will get like the main stakes established.
Okay.
So beginning, middle, end, and then sort of build everything around that. It kind of depends, especially with the second book. You know, I already have established everything and the characters, and that's kind of nice. But it kind of depends when I'm starting on something new. It depends on what part is really inspiring for me. What is my muse there? So if it's a character, then there I could build off of a character, and everything kind of originates from that. But typically, I would say I kind of know. I have a very vague idea of where I want to go, and then I can build around that.
Okay. So let's talk Boots Beneath Her Bed. So this book comes out April 21st, 2026. There's some enemies to lovers ish, but it is very short-lived. It does have a
Yes.
slow burn. It's on a giant ranch in Texas, and it is the story of Grace and Crew. Now, I will say, debut books, sometimes they don't hit. Sometimes there was something about the way that you created this story that it does not read like a debut. Like, it was honestly one of the best debuts I think I have read in a very long time.
Thank you so much.
And one thing I loved is the fact that Grace, our main heroine, does not have the typical job. Like, you did, she's a horse trainer, kind of by force, kind of not, as you read her story. But I love the fact that you did not give her that main, like, when you think woman in a ranch, like, you have like a maid, a cook, like this, like, she was the trainer. I love that choice. What was the inspiration for her story?
So Boots actually originated as fan fiction.
Okay.
So I remodeled it to extend the storyline
Okay.
quite a bit, because it was originally a one shot, and which is just one chapter, full beginning to end. It's
Okay.
10,000 words. It was more of like a slice of life than
Okay.
anything. And the fan fiction originally was inspired by Yellowstone.
Okay.
So, seen a lot
I
of
can see that.
folks talking about it, reminding them of Yellowstone, which I love, because I was very, very, very much in the throes of binging Yellowstone, and just needed to be, I wanted to live in that world. And I did a lot of research, and I wanted to play with the idea of a newcomer coming in to a very established very place, and have like being not so above board, I guess you
Okay.
could say. So she has like a darker past, and she's coming into this like very perfect quintessential Texas ranch world. And but something that was important to me is that she's really good at what she does. And something that I love about Grace, and that I think is something that I maybe not am missing, but something that I would love to have more of in stories, is just like these kind of like no fuss, no muss women. Just like she's very much,
Who she is.
yeah, like there's no. I don't know. She's just very, yeah, very much herself. Doesn't ever try to be anything else, and is very like unprecious in
Yes.
certain ways, which I really like honed in on with her. So I kind of wanted to see how would she fit in as this fish out of water from this kind of crappy other place, coming into this like very, very established, very like wealthy ranch world of Texas.
Well, and as we read the story, we find that not everything is as perfect as it seems at the ranch and with the family. And like we get little snippets into like the history. And I mean, I'm sure it's like gonna be like into the next books and things like that. 'Cause I read the sneak peek, and I'm very excited for book two because I have thoughts, and
Ooh.
I am ready for it.
Oh my gosh. Love
But
that.
I like the fact that, like, on the outside, it is this perfect, like picture of a family, but there is hurt, there is some trauma, like there is, but they're not hiding it at the same time, which I think is an interesting take, because a lot of times when you read a story, like you go into these books and like they try and hide the bad, but they don't really do that. Like they're fairly open, they're very welcoming though too. I mean, not Cruz so much at the beginning, but I think that like it created this subtly pensive environment for Grace.
Yeah, almost like what's the catch here? Yeah, 100%. And yeah, I wanted them to be. I've met people in my life and I enjoy meeting people like this just because I feel like it challenges your no like preconceived notions of how people should behave. And these people I've met, my like childhood best friend was like this. I have a coworker slash great friend who's very much like this, where they're just so kind and so open and warm and just like you're kind of like,
What's the
what's the
catch?
deal?
Like, how
Like,
can they
what's
be
the catch?
so nice?
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
Like, they're just say.
they're almost like obnoxiously kind.
Yes, exactly.
I
And
know a
so,
couple of people like that too, and I'm like, how were they this nice all the time? You're
yes.
truly that kind of person.
Exactly. The cynic in me is wondering where are you like hiding the bad? You
Yeah.
know, where's the
Where's the
ulterior
devil on the
motive
shoulder
here?
side?
Yeah, exactly. And so meeting people like that has challenged me to recognize that goodness can exist in people and be a genuine and consistent quality. And I think that that's something that Renata and Clint both, I wanted them to have that. And part of that is because like Grace has never been, she's never been surrounded by good people. And so to give her not just good, but like in almost inherently good and kindness to just wrap her up and remind her that she deserves that, I think was very important to me. But I think to your point, yeah, they're multi-dimensional people. They can be very good and very kind and then also have a lot of their own issues. And I think, yeah, maybe we'll explore that. But to Grace, they're perfect, right? So
What's
yeah.
the catch?
Yeah.
Well, and you introduced that, like, when she meets the ranch hands for this first time, because of like what she experienced at her uncle's place and the way that she has lived the past like so many years, and like she walks into that situation like terrified almost that it's going to be the same thing. And it's like, when is the shoe going to drop? When is the facade going to like go away? And it doesn't. And it definitely takes her some time to get used to that.
Yeah. And Crew doesn't help with that either, so.
No, but Crew in himself, like he has his own issues, his own challenges that he brings to the table. What was your inspiration for Crew? I mean, I know the Yellowstone side of it, but there has to be more than that.
Well, and it was also the fan fiction part of it, so yes, I came from like the Raylo fandom. I don't think that's a secret. Doesn't need to be. So he's some flavor of Ben Solo slash Kylo Ren slash Adam Driver. Again, not a secret, doesn't need to be. That's who he is, and he's a big, tall, taciturn man, which is a pattern for me, not just with Adam Driver and his characters, but in the past. So just, I love a brooding, big, mean to everyone except her kind of guy. Like that's just always been like catnip for me. So there's, yeah, I think he's a sum of that obsession, lifelong obsession put on the page.
Like, I always joke in my reading, like, I love an asshole. Like,
Yes.
I love a guy who is just horrible to most everybody. Like, that is not, my husband is like one of the kindest,
In,
sweetest
yeah, in
people.
real life, we don't
Like,
need
my real life is so different than what I like in my like
that.
reading heroes, but I do like, I love the biggest jerk on page who is like, he hates everyone. And honestly, like, he's kind of mean to his heroine at first, but then it's like, oh, I love her. I'm gonna just treat her like the best thing ever, but I'm still gonna hate everybody else. Like, I love that kind of character.
Me too. And yeah, on in books and in movies
Yes.
and TV. I do not, yeah, in real life, please don't be a jerk to
No, my
everyone.
husband is like the biggest marshmallow ever. Like, I
Yeah.
don't love a cinnamon roll character, but my husband is like a giant cinnamon roll. So,
You read the could kill you marry the cinnamon roll.
exactly. Yes. I mean, a little unhinged is good in my book.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and that's I think with him, I also liked the idea of him having like a competency kink of sorts. Like he's just blown away by how good she is at her job, and like he can see she's tough, and I
Well,
think
especially when he doesn't want to. I think that's part of it too.
right.
He wants to see her fail because he has some like bias against her because of situations. You got to read it to know why. But I think that's part of it, is like he has this idea of who she is or who she should be, and then he sees like she really does know what she's doing. She really is a strong person, even though she like hides a lot of that.
Yeah, he can't deny her and her talent and her grit. And I think as much as he wants to, it just keeps showing up, and she keeps showing that she deserves to be there and that she's not there for like nefarious reasons that he suspects or whatever it is that he's concerned about. Yeah, and I liked the idea of Crew not necessarily like falling in love with Grace because she's just this new sort of pretty tan trainer, but like she's a badass and she proves herself over and over and over again, and he is so impressed with her.
Well,
And
and there's a moment like they're on like they're out in like one of the fields way out, they're tenting for the week, they're fixing fences, and there's this whole Never Have I Ever game that plays out, and there's like that scene with him and his reasonings for certain things. I'm being very vague because you should just read the book, but like his reasonings for why he makes the choices that he does, and like it shows that like he like, you know, at that point, like his thought process on her has definitely changed. And like he is saying things to the whole group, but to her at the same time. So it's like, you know, like he has done the 180 already. But I mean, it has taken time. Like, it's not this like short timeline of like span. Like, there is definitely like time that has passed, but like, you know, that like he knows, but he's letting her know. And she's like, oh.
Yeah. Ooh,
But there's
interesting.
tents and thin walls.
Correct. Yes. Not a great place to have that discovery, but yes.
And there's like, and with this book, there's an element with her uncle of like things that are happening and choices that she makes and things that he does and the consequences of those. And again, it sounds very vague, but like, I don't want to give anything away. But it's just, there's just something about the way you did this story. Like, they do kind of, you do kind of have that third act breakup, but you do, but you don't at the same time. Like, it's one of those pauses essentially, but because of the way the story plays out, it works. And because I love a third act breakup,
I do too.
I
I'm
just, there's something
unpopular
about it.
opinion, but I love it.
Oh, I love it. And I mean, and I read a lot of romantic suspense, so those don't always have third act breakups, but you know, somebody's getting like kidnapped or attacked or something like that. So it's like they don't need that breakup. But this one, like the way the story plays out and like what leads to their moment, like it's just, it was really intense. And then, so the story's told in third person, and we do get Crew's sister a little bit too, and like the introduction to her, like we've met her earlier in the book, and then this big thing happens. And honestly, like, I really like the way that you had that phone call happen. Because I'm like, which I will tell you off camera why I really enjoy that one. But I just, there's just something about the way that you bring them home, like you bring her home, and you
Yeah.
like Crew's brother is already home, which we're going to learn more about him eventually too. It's just you're really introducing this ranch and these members in a really organic way, but there's so much mystery behind like why Cooper is home and why Kaya moved to New York in the first place.
Yes, I'm very, very touched that you said that about the phone call, because that if you're saying what I think you're saying, that's one of the first things that came to me when I was writing that chapter, and really just immediately helped Kaya take shape in my brain, and I fell in love with her just right out of the gate from that first sentence, essentially, and was just like, this is who she is. There is, in the same way that Grace is no muss, no fuss, Kaya is the same, but in a totally different font, basically. And she's so much fun to write and just become, essentially. So yeah, it was, so I'm an only child, and I've always loved movies and TV and books with big families, lots of siblings, sibling dynamics, and things like that. And it was really important to me with this book and this series in general that they felt like full people, but they also felt like they could really be brothers and sisters. Like I know a lot of media people will watch and be like, that is just like not how siblings interact. And as an only child, I worried and wanted to make sure that I didn't go that route. So, yeah, I wanted to establish that family dynamic and like make it realistic, but also just, yeah, maintain some mystery so you do care about these siblings and not just Crew. Yeah. And introduce Kaya right very early.
So I am one of three. I am the baby. I have an older sister and an older brother. My brother is the middle. So this like layout, Crew's the oldest, Kaya's the middle, Cooper's the youngest. Like, but they follow those almost the stereotypical like child order in the way that they present. But the fact that the oldest and the youngest are boys and the middle is a girl, it changes the dynamic. So same for me. Like my brother is the only boy in the family. And so it's like we have some of that like typical like child order like dynamic and mannerisms and things like that. But the fact that like he is the boy and we were the girls, like it adds a different element to it. And like you can definitely see that. And my brother and I are very similar. My sister is like a whole other like monkey. And so, but I felt like with the way the three of them, like it was very, it's very realistic in the way that like Crew is like the intense, broody, like almost militant. I mean, he was in the military, so it makes sense, but he has this like militant way of like doing things. Kaya, like being the only girl, but the middle child, like she has that middle child like syndrome essentially. But being the only girl, it adds another element in Cooper, like what we've seen, which I'm sure that there's way more to him that we see. But like Cooper does kind of like he's the problem child. And I will fully admit that I was the problem child, but I was the baby.
Little
Like I
prick.
was the third one. Nobody at that point, like they'd give up.
He got whatever he wanted.
And I do think that that is going to be a big part of his story and all those things, but I think that you got the interactions and the relationship with them works really well. Like they are close, but there's still distance. Like, and it makes sense.
And that was an important thing for me, is it, I wanted it to feel real and not this, like, I don't know, contrived notion of how siblings interact, or like, you know, they're too close or anything like that. Just because they're, I mean, yeah, they're just people, and I wanted them to have relationships with each other. And I've seen like siblings, my parents have siblings that they like were very like distant from and estranged. And I just like, I wanted that. I want to have that big family feel, which is something that we will dive even further into later. It's just, there's something cozy and warm, and I like comforting to me about that. And so, yeah, I'm glad that they are translating well.
I feel like they are. I mean,
Thank
it's just my opinion, but so
you.
what's next for you? Do you is Kaya's next? I know Kaya is next, but is there anything in between, or are we just going to Kaya?
We're just going to Kaya. Yeah, Beneath a Neon Moon is book two, which is very exciting. And I have talked about how Grace was my sad girl era, and now Kaya is my bad girl era. And she's just a totally different thing, and I love it. It's a lot of fun.
Well, I myself am looking forward to it. But thank you so much, Taylor, for coming on and chatting. Beats me
Thank
for bed.
you.
And until next time, happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.